joining us right now, as he does every Thursday evening at 8:30 for a session of employment law, is Canada's top employment lawyer, Howard Levitt, Levitt LLP. Welcome back to the show, Howard.
Barb, I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you. And you're with Jerry every day at 10, and you have your own show Sundays at 1. I wanted to ask you before we get into...
I guess I'm changing careers, aren't I?
Well, you're such a good broadcaster. It's true. I love having you on the show.
Thank you.
What are your thoughts on bike lanes? Just curious.
Seriously?
No, I'm serious. I'm going somewhere with this.
I hate them. Sorry. I'm a driver, so, and right now university is twice as long as ever, even without everybody back at work. And soon enough, it's going to be a disaster because they've taken university, one of the most biggest thoroughfares in the city, and put to two lanes.
It's unbelievable. I actually haven't been on university since then, but I was just on the Danforth a couple weeks ago, and I hadn't been since they started these bike lanes, and the same thing. It's a lane each way. Danforth from Dawes Road, it's going to be all the way to Broadview, and then Bloor picks up at, it's wild.
Look, we're not Europe. We're not London. We're not Paris. We're not New York. We don't have subways everywhere. Right. So people actually need cars. And they prevented that.
The reason I'm asking you is because I want you to listen to something. We were talking last week about these bike lanes because I encountered the ones on Danforth, and it was crazy. And you're right. No one's back at work, and there was still all this traffic, and it was a mess. And here's what somebody said when they called in. Her name is Dahlia. Listen to what Dahlia said.
The day that Howard Levitt rides his bike to work, maybe I'll give one thumbs up to bike lanes.
Okay.
But until that happens, no thanks.
So you're not riding your bike to work.
It's going to be a while. Although I'm picking up a new bike on Saturday, so you never know.
Well, here's the thing. I've been doing a lot of biking during this time at home, but I won't go on the bike lanes. Like, I won't commute to work. I'm riding trails. I'm doing stuff like that.
Oh, more fun. Yeah, well, you know, look, if the bike lanes kill the traffic because they create so much congestion, which is already happening, people aren't even mostly back at work in the downtown core, you may have no choice but to take a bike to work.
Well, yeah, that's a good point.
Anyway,
well, the day that you take a bike, Dahlia will consider taking the bike to work. All right,
I'll let her know through you.
416-872-1010. You can text us at 71010. Our friend Howard Levitt is here, and we've got Joanne on the line. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. How are you?
We're good, thank you. Go ahead with your question for Howard.
Okay. I just want to know, my son-in-law gets his temperature taken every day at work. What happens if you have a cold and you have a temperature? Like, do you have to stay home for 10 days, or how is that going to work?
Well, they're probably going to say get tested, which takes a couple of days, and then they'll let him back or her back in after that.
Oh, because I'm just wondering, it's going to be crazy with everybody... You know, because the cold season's coming up, and how's the work going to go if they're sending people home?
Well, they're going to have quicker testing, and they do have quick testing. They're ramping up in Ontario, so I think we'll be able to get tests pretty quickly.
Okay.
And so within 2 or 3 days, you'll be back at work, assuming she doesn't have COVID, in which case you won't be back at work for quite some time.
Yeah. Okay.
Joanne, thanks.
The company's under no obligation to pay you while you're home.
People, you can't let people who might have COVID into a workplace.
So, absolutely.
And they'd be negligent otherwise, and there'd be liability otherwise.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Joanne. And that, you know, it's interesting, that topic is coming up a lot in terms of back to school. And some people feeling very unsafe about it, some people feeling like it's overdue, that kids need to get back, and what happens when one person gets sick, and it may not even be COVID, but kids get stuff all the time.
Well, imagine if you had an instantaneous test instead of working on the vaccine, and people put energy into an instantaneous test, everything would open up again. You could have stadiums where the Raptors were playing and just took a quick instantaneous test of everybody as they go by, the same way you do a quick search as you go by. And if they pass, they go in and they're safe. If they don't pass, well, fine. They don't get in.
Yeah, no, it's a great point. And then you know you...
Restaurants, anything.
Yeah, no, it's true. We've got Phil on the line. Hey, Phil.
Hi.
Hi, go ahead with Howard.
Yeah, thanks for taking my call. I'm a delivery guy at a company. Like, I just drive a van. But a few years ago, they decided to get a bigger truck that required the CVOR. And apparently for the CVOR to take the test, it has to be the owners or an officer of the company.
Sir, I don't know what a CDOR is.
Oh, that's a commercial vehicle operator.
Oh, okay. A commercial license. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah. So anyways, for whatever reason, there was a few reasons, I guess, like I was taking the test. So they had me put on, like, as general manager, although I'm just the van driver, right? And I took the test. But do I have any liability, like, now? And anything, if something should go wrong with the company or something?
because you have a title general manager? No, I wouldn't worry about that.
Oh, okay. And because I took the CVOR test. Like they sort of had it done on the company papers there.
Look, you're not an officer of the company. You're
I'm not,
a delivery driver.
Yeah, okay.
So I would not worry about this. You're not actually an officer of the company.
Oh, okay, yeah. No, I was just worried about that because, yeah, I'm just the van driver.
Yeah, you don't want to take on all that responsibility, do you, Phil?
Yeah, well, no, I heard some other things. Like, I listen to your show every day, and I heard some other things you were talking about. Liabilities of the officers of the company or principals and the owners, and I just thought I should check on it.
All right, Phil, thanks a lot for the call.
I would not worry about it at all, not for a moment.
I heard you talking one day this week. Actually, you won't believe it, but it's true, because I've texted you. I have you on when I'm sitting on the deck. I was riding my bike in the valley yesterday or the day before, and I wanted to I was listening to Jerry's show, and you happened to be on, and you were talking about, I can't remember which company it was, but the timing with which directors will resign before the company announces bankruptcy or something.
Absolutely. That's why you hear, and people think this is horrible, everybody's resigned the very same day everybody's let off. But of course they have to, because if you're not getting paid your wages and the officers and directors are still in place, you can sue them personally for your unpaid wages. So that's why, if there's any risk of payroll not being met, they'll resign in a heartbeat, because they don't want to be in the hook personally.
So they will always do that before a bankruptcy?
Always before wages aren't maintained.
Okay.
If they're not going to make payroll, they're out immediately.
Okay. And they will often leave with a decent package to tide them over.
If they can, if the company's in that much trouble, they're not about to meet payroll, there's probably no package to be had.
Okay. Great to have you with us this Thursday evening. Howard Levitt is here too, Canada's top employment lawyer, answering any and all of your employment questions. He joins Jerry Agar every day at 10. He's on his own show, Employment Law, Sundays at 1, and he's kind enough to join us every Thursday evening at 8:30. You can give us a call or send us a text question, 416-872-1010. Text us at 71010. Howard, I heard you take a breath. You got something?
No, I just waiting for your next question, next caller.
All right. So, question for Howard on the text board. Can he quickly explain fiduciary duty for an employee to employer as it pertains to an employee wanting to resign and join a direct competitor? I have no non-compete restrictions in my current employment contract.
Okay. It's a complicated area of the law, but let me simplify it. A fiduciary is a senior executive who essentially has policy-making decisions on behalf of the employer, and the employer is vulnerable to their predations. They're in a position of trust and vulnerability. And as a result of that, whether or not you have a non-competition clause, you can't steal the company's, clients or business opportunities after you leave, even if you don't have a clause prohibiting you from doing that. That's the nature of the job. And you have a duty of utmost loyalty and utmost good faith, even more than regular employees who still have a duty of faithfulness. And it is much easier to terminate them for cause for any aspect of his loyalty. But in terms of post-termination obligations, it's a duty not to take away their product, whether it's customers or secrets or business opportunities you happen to know about because you work there.
Have you ever, I don't know if you've done this, have you ever dealt with people in this industry and broadcast, entertainment, that kind of stuff? I've heard of people with these non-compete clauses. So somebody will go off the air at one station and then you won't hear from them for a year and they've already accepted a job somewhere else, but they can't work there yet.
Yes. And some contracts are enforceable and many are not. Because the problem is this, the broader you make them, the more likely a court is going to say it's a restraint on trade and therefore unenforceable. So by giving yourself too much protection ostensibly, by making it too long a term or covering too many potential companies or too big a geographical area, you give yourself no protection at all. And you can't say, they used to have these clauses, you'd see, well, 50 miles from the city of Toronto, but if that's unenforceable, 30 miles from the city of Toronto, that's unenforceable, 20 miles, or 3 years, that's unenforceable, 2 years, that's unenforceable. Well, that the courts are seeing this as all nonsense because an employee has to know what their deal is. The court can't decide what it is after the fact. So you better pick your numbers and pick your area, and you'd better be cautious or you'll get no protection.
If a company has that sort of clause with someone, say you can't work in a competitive station in the same market for a year, is the company then also paying that person for that year that they're not allowed to work?
Well, that is one of the factors the courts look at to see if it's enforceable. Let's assume the employee resigned. They're not going to be paid at all because they're not going to get any severance. But certainly, if it's a termination situation, the court will often say, well, they're only giving 6 months severance pay, but you're asking for 12 months protection from competing. That's not fair, and that's another reason they get struck down. So good judicial thinking, Barb.
Thank you. 416-872-1010. You can text us at 71010. A question for Howard. One of my employees has been off since March to take care of her toddler son. Now she tells me that she's not returning to work in September as planned, as she chose to get her son online learning for next school semester. She's not quitting her job here either. What do we do?
Well, I don't know what her choice is. If it's not her option to enroll her child for online learning, if school is available. If school is available, the employer can search that one and find out pretty quickly, then she cannot take her kid out of school and keep her job. The employer can say, no, you have school available. The law protects you if you don't have school available or you don't have daycare available and you have no choice but to stay home for childcare reasons. If you have a choice, then you better send your kid to school. And if you choose not to and choose to stay home, you've just resigned.
Okay, so perfect example, elementary schools where parents are being given a choice. But if one of those choices is an option to go back to school, then you cannot keep them home if they have an option to go back to school and say you're not going back to your work.
Correct.
All right. Interesting stuff. We've got lots more text questions. If you want to call Howard, 416-872-1010. Received severance package that was a two-parter. One for time worked at the company and two for release waiver. If I wanted to challenge the offer, would a court look at it in total?
I'm sorry, one's for release waiver?
That's what it says. This is why we like people to call in so you can ask them to clarify.
Yeah, I'm not sure. And what was the other one, Barb?
So one for time worked at the company and two for release waiver.
I don't even understand the question, so it's hard for me to answer it.
Okay. I am a fully commissioned salesperson. However, as of COVID-19, I took time away from work because I have an underlying autoimmune condition, which my mother passed away from a few years ago. My concern is my employer may ask me to come back to work since I'm their top producer. However, I'm not comfortable to go back. Also, my doctor has advised me against this. What are my options?
Your options are to express your wishes and concern. And if the employer says, tough, you're coming back, then you have to show that the workplace that you're working, you're an outside sales rep, so I'm not sure how dangerous it could be anyway. You could wear a mask, you can keep away from people, you have a lot of control over your own environment if you're a commissioned outside sales rep. But anyway, you could try to discuss with your employer, and if they say, no, we want you back, you're going to have to prove that it's unsafe and call an occupational health and safety inspector who will do an inspection and they will determine whether it's unsafe for you. And so far, it's been about 95% pro-employer. In other words, they've been finding it safe about 95% of the time in Ontario. So likely he's going to be ordered back to work. And his doctor's opinion, well, doctors write what you want them to write. You know that. So they take that with many grains of salt.
Oh, that's funny. I'm sure not every doctor will just write what you want them to write, or will they?
No, but 95% of them.
All right, Fiona is on the line. Hi, Fiona. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Go ahead with Howard.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I was let go from a job on Monday where I had worked for 15 years. I'm 58. I was a senior manager. And what they're offering is...
How much you earned? Fiona, how much did you earn?
$68,000.
$68,000, okay. Okay, everything else was great until that moment. I mean, I thought you were going to say $120,000, but senior manager, 58, 15 years. Actually, oh, fair enough. Okay, a court would probably give you, I'd say, 16 months' pay. What do they offer you?
They offered 8 weeks termination and 15 weeks severance.
So they offer you 5.5 months' pay versus 16 months' pay. I don't think it's much of an option, is it?
No.
That is not an option.
There were other people involved as well, so I wondered, like, would the next step be to maybe contact your office and
yes
that would be smart.
Yes.
Okay, I will do that tomorrow.
Okay, I mean, you work 15 years, you're at least entitled to your 16 months, not to walk away with 5.5 months. That's a big difference. Now, I suspect it's just a low ball initial offer, but still,
yeah,
not being serious.
Okay.
All right,
no,
Fiona, thanks a lot for the call. I can only imagine.
Nonprofit, Barb, doesn't matter a whit in terms of the law.
Okay. I would love to see the look on some people's faces when they get a note from Howard Levitt. He's taken on Fiona's case or whoever's case. Tony is next. Hey, Tony. Hi, Tony.
Hi, everyone. Can you hear me okay?
Sure.
You
go ahead.
Now.
Yes, hi. It's an unusual case. It's last October I became disabled through a stroke, and I was in hospital till December, and I've gone back to work part time from December through till about March, and then I decided to do a little bit of home work at home because of COVID-19. Anyway, just all of a sudden, one particular morning before we got to work, just about a month ago, they closed the store that I was working in just rather abruptly and very suddenly. It was a bit of a shock to everybody. So we were shifted to another store, and I wasn't too sure. They've been good. I've got no complaints about how they have done some things, but I just feel that there might be some constructive dismissal going on, even though I've been given an area to work in at another store. Out of the blue, just recently, I've been asked to pay for some stock that may have gone missing from the store I used to work at. Now, the interesting thing was, I know nothing about
it. I hope you said no, because paying for it would be an admission of guilt and they'd fire you for theft.
Did you say no to paying for it?
I said no to paying for it, yes. And
okay.
I thought, when they say we've been asking about the stock for a while, okay, well, in the email, Charles, there's only two items, and now suddenly it's 12. And they said, you know, we're doing you a favor because it's got to be this price. And even if you've got a stroke or you're working from home, you've got to know what your workplace is doing.
Wow.
And I can't be really responsible for that because I was very susceptible to COVID-19, so I decided to do work from home. And they said, well, you can no longer work from home. You've got to work at the store, or otherwise you don't get paid your hourly rate.
Let me be clear about this to everybody listening. An employer has a right to say to employees, it's time to come back to work. And if you don't come back to the workplace, we're going to fire you for cause. And it doesn't matter a whit if you can prove you're more productive at home. If the workplace is ostensibly safe and they want you to work from work, not from home, you have to go back, and you're risking your job if you don't.
Tony, we're almost out of time. Can you ask Howard the question?
So my question is, would I be responsible for something like that, like out of the blue, because I want it to be paid by this weekend? And do I have any rights being a disabled person? I'm working full-time at the moment. I'm going back to work, and I'm doing the hard yards as much as I physically can do.
I'm not sure I heard the first question, the second question.
So he was asking, if they want him to pay for this missing stock by this weekend.
Well, he's not going to.
You just don't. Just say, I have nothing to do with that.
And then they're going to fire you for cause if you, because then you've essentially admitted it by paying for it. So second thing, that's the second question is, as a disabled person, you have a right to be accommodated, to be given a job you're physically capable of doing, and to have your job modified to permit that. That's your right. And you have an obligation as part of that to work with the accommodation. It doesn't have to be the perfect accommodation. It may not be as good a job as you had before. It may not pay as much as the job you had before, but it's the best job and the highest paying job relative to your last job you're physically capable of doing. You have to agree to do it.
Howard, we're out of time, but I've got to ask you this one question on the text board, because it's crazy. My employer says they cannot disclose if they've qualified for CEWS. Could they be receiving the funds and not distributing it to us?
Well, they don't actually legally have to tell you if they're getting CEWS, and they could be receiving the funds and not distributing it, but that would be fraud. So, but how is the employee going to know? And the employees think they have a right to force their employer to apply for CEWS, and they don't, because the employer has various hoops they have to go through to get the money in the first place, but it's in their interest to get it, obviously, for lots of reasons. It's free money, for starters, but there's no right to ask. You can ask, but they don't have to tell you. And I guess at the end of the day, you might be able to get a freedom of information request of the government to tell you if your employer has, I see no reason or no exception why you wouldn't get information from the government, but the employer doesn't have to tell you. And okay. If the employer is getting the money and for you and not giving it to you, that's fraud.
How? What
so
can
I
they
don't
do?
Think many employers would play that game.
Okay. Okay. Great to have you. We are way out of time, but love having you on. And we'll talk to you next
love
week, Howard
on.
Levitt.
Thanks, Barb.
Thanks, Howard Levitt, Canada's top employment lawyer.